U.S. Chess Executive Board Open Session Number 1, Sunday, January 13th, 2019, Orlando, Florida. Mr. President.
Good morning.
We need to call it a roll.
Good morning. Thank you all for being here for our January meeting. In the past, we have not necessarily had a formal board meeting at this time. For the last several years, we have had a January meeting that focused on some things like strategic planning, strategic planning updating. We added budget discussions to that last year. And so while it is Sunday, the 13th of January, we have been in session, in workshop sessions on Friday and on Saturday. On Friday, we were working on the strategic plan and strategic direction for this organization, and we spent a great deal of time then on Saturday on discussions around our budget philosophy and where we were going. There's still some more work to be done on the budget issue, so we're not going to actually put that budget into the minutes and do some approval of that. We will look at that probably in our March meeting as we finalize that as to what we're going to present to the delegates. But I appreciate everybody's time over the last 2 days to work on really what a board ought to be about, and that's setting strategy and setting direction for the organization to go. Too often, in my experience, this board has focused way too tactically and not near enough strategically. So that's part of the goal we've been trying to change for the last several years. And you push on a big rock hard enough and it starts to roll a little bit. And then you keep pushing on it and it starts rolling harder. So I think we're making some really good progress. So with that, Mr. Secretary, would you call the roll so that we establish we have a quorum of the board?
President Kreese.
Here.
Vice President Bauer.
Present.
Vice President of Finance, Unruh.
Here.
Secretary Niekman is here. Members at large, Mike Hoffpower.
Here.
Al Spreckman.
Here.
And Ryan Velez.
Here.
And Executive Director Meyer.
Here.
All right. On our agenda, which has been properly published.
You want to add the...
Yes, I'm sorry.
Also present.
Also present, our guests from our team. We have Jeff Isaacs, our relatively newly hired Director of Development. We have National Events Director Boyd Reed and our Communications Director Dan Lucas. And we appreciate you all's input over the last couple of days working on strategic questions as well. So thank you all for being here. We had pre-meeting reports. Do we have, those were issued to you. Some are in paper in the handout that you got. Others had been sent to you via email in the last week or so before the meeting. Do we have questions or issues about any of the pre-meeting reports?
Does that include committee reports?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. President, I just want to, and I'll ask you a question first whether or not this should be reserved for closed session, but it has to do with the ongoing Henderson Middle School case and whether or not if the ethics actions are not completed by that time, whether or not there should be some other temporary actions taken, because as people start to register for that event, it's quite possible we may have students from that particular school who register, and it just causes a ruckus among some of the membership. Perhaps we can discuss this further in closed session.
It probably is appropriate to discuss in closed session, but it is also appropriate in open session to say we're very well aware of that situation, and we have been following what ethics is doing with interest. The ethics process is independent of the executive board. The ethics process is fully under the control of the delegates, and they have set up the ethics committee. We are well aware that the ethics committee is working on it, and has been working on pretty diligently. It's a complex case because it involves a number of complainants and it involves a number of respondents. Mm-hmm. And many of these people are juveniles. And under the delegate's motion related to that, the Ethics Committee has added a layer of discussion in that with their Scholastic Ombudsman, which has slowed the resolution of the case down because it added a whole nother step. And they've been moving on the case with some clarity. It just, the due process part takes time. Our report on that from the Ethics Committee, which I think is fair to put in open session, is that they are nearing the end of kind of the last correspondence period. The process.
Within a week.
Yeah, like within a week or so, they will have had anyone who, from both sides who are going to comment on the case, all of the comment periods will have ended. So accusations made, responded to, response to the response, and the response to the response to the response.
Correct.
So all of that will end shortly, and that will then provide the committee with the raw material for them to do. Now, you know, the committee may then engage in some other work on their own. We've seen that happen in some recent cases where they were looking at ratings reports and ratings changes and that sort of thing. I do believe that the chair of that committee is aware of the need to have this resolved relatively soon, that it becomes, the longer that it goes on, and as longer as we get close to the next event, it becomes a lot bigger problem. But I don't know that we can count on the fact that they'll finish their work. We certainly don't want to rush their work. And we are not going to influence their work. I mean, they are independent from us. Once they do make a recommendation, it may end up in our plate if things that they recommend to do are appealed. Understand they will make a recommendation of some action to take, and then there is a period of time for anyone who is subject to any action to appeal that. So even if they do, it may take some time for the rest of that to be resolved. But there is stuff doing on it. I have heard rumblings of, oh, you're not doing anything. That's not at all true. But these things take time if one is going to apply any some sort of due process to it, particularly in a case that's this complex. It involves this many people. Is that fair enough, and we'll move the rest of that discussion in closed session, because I agree with you. I think we have to have a plan. If it's not resolved, what we're going to do with our event.
Yes, thanks.
Okay. Anything else?
The other matter I'd like to briefly mention is that, as many of the members may recall, the ratings committee has been doing a deep dive through the services of Professor Mark Glickman, who is the chair of the ratings committee, taking a look at the variability in player ratings. And Mark reported that they have finished the study. They're just now doing the final wrap-up and the writing and so forth that's associated with the study. He reports that he does think that there is some viability to what they're going to recommend, but of course that'll go before the greater ratings committee and they'll discuss it, and ultimately something would come up through the ratings committee in some form or another that could potentially affect how ratings are displayed on our website and how ratings are used in tournaments. But the executive board had asked for that to be looked at, and that process is coming to closure now.
Are there questions about that? We have some newer board members since that original discussion was made. So are you guys kind of up to speed on where we're at on this thing? Okay.
Do you want those college items now or later?
Let's go ahead and do that now.
All right. The college committee has two requests. One is a committee change, so we'll dispense with that quickly. I'll make a motion to move to add Alex Onoshuk to the college chess committee and to remove Rade Milanovic, as Rade is retiring from UT Dallas. The timing on this, just as background, is that they have their annual meeting at the Pan Am Intercollegiate between Christmas and New Year, so this is customary for committee changes to occur at this time. Mm-hmm.
And just to amplify that, Mr. Onishuk has been added to the FIDE Chess and Education Committee with the specific charge of looking at college and post-secondary programs. So I think that adding him to our committee, particularly with his recent FIDE appointment, is just perfect. I mean, I think that really ought to happen. So all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0.
Second item is a proposal to name a new national event. There was a bid that was submitted, but there were problems with the bid for running it this year. So I'm not sure it's going to happen this year, but the college committee would like us to at least ratify it as a new national event and just get it on the list of national events. And that is a new, let's see here, a National Collegiate Rapid and Blitz Championships.
So this would be a new national championship. The rationale behind it from the folks who are interested in doing it is that we really only have two collegiate-focused events, one of which is the Pan Am.
The other open event.
I'm sorry?
An open event.
Which is an open event. And then the other is the Final Four, which is certainly not an open event. So this would add an open event that would be individual in nature, although it would probably be done as a team modified Swiss, but as opposed to the Pan Am, which is a team event. You know, it's a four-board team-on-team event. So the proponents of this are looking at a gap, trying to fill a gap. I think our college committee was fairly enthusiastic about doing this.
Yes.
So is there any discussion?
It's been my observation working with the college committee. I think at least for this event, they need to go on and propose what they think are going to be the governing parameters for the event, like what age of people are eligible, and, you know, I mean, do I have to be a full-time student? Can I be a part-time student? You know, those sorts of things, so that we don't have someone who's, you know, 72 years old and taking courses at the community college thinks that they're eligible to participate in the event. I mean, it's a reasonable question. So I think they just need to...
We're locked on, yeah.
The good news is that they already have a substantial body of work around eligibility for college events based on the Pan Am. So I suspect they're way down the path on that.
Yeah. They haven't really mentioned that, but what I'm going to add to the motion is that directs the college committee to draft a set of guidelines.
Yeah.
Something.
I believe the bid that came in referenced the existing qualifications.
Yeah, like for the Pan Am.
Well, they're going to want to include it in their official document.
I agree. No. I think people are sort of thinking they need to do something like that. We just thought formalize.
Yeah, and draft a set of guidelines to host the event or run the event. So I've got. I move to add the National Collegiate Rapid and Blitz Championships to the list of national events and directs the college committee to draft a set of guidelines to run the event.
And I'm not sure if it needs to be discussed, Mr. President, whether we should consider this going forward as an event that will be bid out, and if there is no one who submits a bid, the event won't be held, or is this going to be an event that if there is no bid, the Federation itself is going to host the event?
I think at this point, the Federation does not have the resources to host the event on our own.
Right.
So I think this falls into the category of bid events, that if there's no bid for it, it may not happen. And we have a number of events that are like that.
Right.
So.
And then we can perhaps discuss in closed session, and Mike, maybe if you remind us where that particular event may need to fall in our matrix of events in terms of, you know, it's number 1, 2, 3, or 4, so that we have it appropriately.
I have an idea.
Category 5.
Well, the Pan Am and the Final Four are level 2 at this point, And so I think the proposal the other day was put it at level three.
It was. We, for the record, we did discuss, we do have a national events priority listing, if you will, where we divide national and international events, where we divide stuff into four buckets, conveniently numbered one through four. And within those broader classifications, we have not necessarily prioritized the event. So a level four event, level one event is one that we think defines what this organization is, and that we need to find a way to do that if at all possible. Level two is, well, we really think we ought to be doing that, but if we don't have the ability to make it happen, then we're not going to lose a tremendous amount of sleep over it. Category three is, well, that's nice if that happens, you know, and again, like if it's a bid event and there's no bid, we're not going to go out of our way to make it happen. Level four is we don't really care. What's in an item like level four? The FIDE Cities Championship is probably a good example of that one. And a number of those in the category four level are international events that that have proliferated that are not, that are international open events that may be grouped. The FIDE Schools Championship is another example of that.
Events that we have traditionally not sent.
And that we have traditionally not sent people. Some of them they're new. So yeah, in our discussion like yesterday, I think that Mike Neatman is correct. We did talk about that in the category three.
That's what I have in my notes.
Okay, any other discussion?
Do you want me to update you on club accessibility?
No, I want to vote on this matter first.
Oh, sorry.
All in favor? Say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Okay. So now, Ryan, please go ahead.
Clubs committee has had some leadership changes. Will Borella stepped down, and the voted Judith Sakari in as chair, and we also avoided the co-chair situation just for clarity of chain of command. She agreed to do her first, the committee's first priority is going to be getting the charter going, and then after that they're going to work on the guide that will help us or help others understand how to successfully get chess clubs up and going by providing examples from around the country and things like that. I have a very high degree of confidence that Judah will succeed in getting this done. So that's basically it from the clubs committee for the moment until we get the charter.
This clubs packet does exist now, it's just antiquated. So they've got a place to start from. They don't have to reinvent the wheel. Mm-hmm. But it desperately needs to be updated. It's something we've been asking for 3 years now.
Yeah, I'll get that too.
So it becomes important. If we can't get the clubs committee to move on this, then I'm going to recommend that we replace the entire group and put in a working group, a small working group who's committed to getting this done. I just think that's very critical.
Yeah, I think, Ryan, it's important that as our liaison, that one of the things you can really help them with is understanding where this particular club fits within our objectives and goals for the organization.
Now that I have that, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and you can articulate that to them, and that way they can make sure actions that they're considering mm-hmm. do in fact have relevance and are tied to the goals and objectives of the organization.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. The accessibility committee, they've made great progress on what they're producing. Basically, their goal is to create a sort of, I guess I'm just going to say the word guide because I don't know what form it's going to take, but essentially some kind of guide that can be published for tournament organizers that will give them a little bit of precedent for how to accommodate people who have accessibility needs. Obviously, they can't cover everything, but one of the major things that they agreed upon was if somebody shows up to a tournament the day of and they require a special accommodation, the answer is often going to be no, you didn't give us time. So they've put a 2-week window in, basically say if you have a special circumstance that you need to accommodate for, you need to contact the tournament organizers within 2 weeks of the event so that they can yes or no that, depending on the site possibilities and things like that. But they've had a lot of other stuff going on. But that was one thing that I thought was very critical, because it gives organizers the ability to step back from something if it's too last minute. Because sometimes the answer is no. If you have a site with only steps and no elevator because it was built in the 1940s, what do? You know, so I think that was important. And they have...
I would recommend that they discuss that matter with the rules committee.
Oh, yeah.
Because that may require some kind of addition to an appropriate place in the rules.
Yeah, definitely.
Because if we're going to specify 2 weeks and it's supposed to be to the benefit of all organizers and tournament directors,
yes,
and so forth, that's the best place to state it as opposed to just...
Yeah, they've broken their ideas down into four different phases. That is part of one of them. They want to have something to give to them first. But yes, they're definitely going to work with the rules committee at some point. So that's the basic rundown of the accessibility committee, if anybody had any questions about that.
Well, certainly the focus of the accessibility committee from its beginning has really been on ways to mainstream all people, yeah, mm-hmm, into common events, mm-hmm, much more than having separate events for people. The only separate event that we have based on any sort of physical issue within our federation is the U.S. Blind Championship. Mm-hmm. I'm not aware of anything else. We make accommodations in our events for all sorts of people for all sorts of other reasons. Mm-hmm. But I think that's what they're... Well, I know that's what their thrust is, mm-hmm, at this point. So, and frankly, that is very similar to the FIDE thrust. Mm-hmm. While FIDE also is having events that are special for special needs folks.
I will also state my last item. The Women's Committee got their email to me with all the stuff they wanted to discuss a lot later than we wanted. So I informed them as of last night or the night before, I can't remember, that we will put it on the agenda for the next meeting, discuss things, and inform them that I was reminded that we have a 30-day window. I had actually not remembered to remind them 30 days ago, so I informed them of that too.
Yeah, we're not going to get stuff on the Wednesday before the meeting and put it on, right, on the agenda for the meeting.
Yeah, I agree.
There's just not enough time for us to be prepared. It's not enough time for the office team to be prepared with stuff they need, yeah, to have. And so if folks want to get stuff at the last minute, we'll be happy to consider it the next one.
Yeah, part of it's definitely my fault. During that period, the 1 month before, that's when I was moving and sick and all that stuff, and I dropped the ball on that.
Well,
it's not the first time that particular commissioner,
sure,
told that.
My fault being the reminder part. I should have reminded them.
Other comment about that. I mean, this is our committee. They, sure, are to assist, to provide us advice and counsel, but their request for something to be on the agenda is not automatic inclusion in it for our discussion either, as we've set up different topics for different meetings, mm-hmm, and sometimes there aren't enough hours in the day either.
Yeah. So I agree with the policy.
Just so that's communicated to them. That,
yeah, I'll reiterate it.
Everything, yeah, that every committee presents to us for consideration. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'd like to report on the Reserve Fund and the Professional Players Benefit Fund. And that committee, the committee has voted to recommend that we increase our allocation to cash deposit instruments, insured cash deposit instruments, to 35% from 25%. This would give us a more conservative profile. And with the recent increase in interest rates, we're not sacrificing our goal, which is 2.5% or above. In fact, December was the first month that we had taken action under the Reserve Fund Committee plan. And in that plan, we have CD ladders that every 2 months we'll be purchasing CDs up to 35% of the entire money that's in the Reserve Fund. As of this date, we have allocated approximately $150,000 to CDs at three different banks. They are CDs with the rate, average rate of 2.72%, and we will collect the money in December, so that will be additional funds coming in December. During December, we took the opportunity under the plan we presented to the board to invest 8.3% in preferred indexes and preferred stocks. That has worked very well. The timing of that model was coincident with the downturn in the market. We were very, very fortunate. So we gained value of at least $4,000 in the account.
We bought on sale.
Yes, we bought at a garage sale.
Yeah.
It just so the remainder of the fund, which is 80% at this time, is invested in short deposit accounts, meaning it is spread short term between multiple banks and has a lower yield. Now the we're not getting 2.72%. But over time, as we develop this one-year CD ladder, every 2 months we'll make investments in new products that are offered by Ameritrade. All this is within the account. We're not going outside the account to banks. So these are special offerings that come through Ameritrade. Some of the offerings seem to be quite lucrative in this ladder combination. We're looking into those. Where after several months, the rate jumps from maybe 2.7 to 3, and then for the last 6 or 7 months, we will get somewhere near 4% on our money. And these are all insured products by well-known banks such as J.P. Morgan, our Bank of America. So everything's going well according to plan. We do ask that the board approve our modification to increase the allocation toward CDs, our cash deposits, and insured with insured banks. Now that's FDIC insurance.
So moved.
So we're moving from 25% to 35%, making the fund more conservative.
Would you make sure to write that up for Mike so that you get it written down? And why don't we, I don't get a sense anyone's opposed to that. Why don't we get it written and then we'll vote on the actual language that's written down. I don't think it's a big deal. Just write it and then Mike will have it. Is that cool?
Yeah. Sure.
And we'll come back to that in a minute. One thing I think to note there, I do not believe that the Professional Players Health Benefits Fund CDs have been moved into that plan just yet because we were waiting for them to mature. So there's no big rush to do that. The idea is that those CDs at Cumberland County Bank, it's about $105,000, will get moved into this program. One of the questions that did come up among the committee was, do y'all think you're going to need this money anytime soon? Because obviously that has an impact on how you invest it. And the answer to that was, no, we don't. And the second answer was, and we're not putting into stuff that's subject to a whole lot of market risk anyway. So, you know, anything that's in some sort of time deposit, the worst thing that happens is you break it and they keep some of your earnings on it. So there's no big deal there. Okay, are there other things that you guys have from liaison stuff before we move into the next part of the meeting?
The Chess and Education Committee was put on hold, just reminding people that that happened.
All righty. Moving along, is there anything in the pre-meeting reports that we want to discuss? There are a couple things I'd like to discuss about events, but boy, so get ready. But is there anything else? Questions about public communications or other? I'm going to hold off on the stuff from the director of development because we're going to spend some more time on that later. We're going to hold off on the financial savings because we're going to spend some more time on that later. Is there anything you'd like to?
I'm sorry. I thought you were asking the floor if there were any questions for me specifically.
I was, actually.
Oh, okay.
Is there anything you'd like to expand on that?
I guess I'll just mention that the biggest project on my plate right now is getting the rule book off to the printer. Tim Just and I have become really good buddies over the last few months, spending many, many hours on the phone together, going over edits and such to the book. Where it stands right now is the text editing is complete. I'm now working with Frankie Butler to kind of jazz it up a little bit. I've selected Kindle Direct Publishing as our printing format. Been in regular contact with Sean for about getting it into his hands. He's very excited about getting it. The timeline is I expect to have files uploaded to Kindle in February and have the book available by the end of March, if not sooner. A stretch goal is to have it available by the National High School, but that's just a stretch goal.
And have it available means someone can order, can pull it down electronically, or actually can order a printed copy, right?
Right. So one of the benefits of Kindle Direct Publishing is that once you've prepared the print files, it's a simple push of a button to create an e-book. So yes, correct.
Then I can read it on my Kindle.
Right.
Correct.
Yay!
And there's been some latent demand for that. We know it's been out there.
Sure. See, I have a Kindle.
And where the world is different today, used to you had to print a whole bunch of copies of stuff to be able to do it. And today, it's almost print on, well, it is print on demand in reality. So there's not a stack of these books sitting somewhere. They'll print them, bind them up, and send them out as they get ordered, I think.
And it's actually one of the things Tim, Justin, and I have been talking about as well is to use that to our advantage for that, you know, for the inevitable typos and errors that we may find in the initial print run. Correct that for the future ones, because again, it'll be a simple matter to upload the files. There's no upfront cost from Amazon for setup like there is for the print magazine. So far, it's going well.
Along that same line, then, elements of this have already been put online.
Correct. So it was mid-December. We did chapters 1 and 2, which are the main rules and tournament and blitz rules chapters. Those went up in December. We have to update them now. Again, just a simple version change because there's some text in there about rules that wouldn't do effect on 1-1 that doesn't need to be there anymore. But again, simple correction. Other than that, I haven't heard from anybody that there have been any problems with it. So. Seems like people are generally happy that it's there.
And what we did is we made it somewhat granular, so if all you want is blitz rules, you can get just blitz rules.
Correct.
If all you want is regular tournament rules, you can get regular tournament rules. If you want to get the whole thing, you get the whole thing.
Right, and so there are four files up there. Chapters 1, 2, and 11 together, chapters 1, 2, and 11 separately. And the only problem with that is that there may be some link issues that don't work. We do have a disclaimer in each file about that.
I still think it's the right way to do it. I was sort of insistent on that because, you know, in a regular event, you just don't care what the blitz rules are. It's just completely irrelevant. And when you really need the blitz rules, you need the blitz rules, you know? And you may not need the whole. I just come to that as a director, you know, when I'm directing a blitz event and I've got a 4-page document, that's all I really need for it.
Sure.
Okay, good. Well, I think we've made a lot of progress there. It certainly was one of the things that the delegates have pushed us to do for a couple of years, and it was a delegate action for us to deal with for this year, and I think we're well down the path on that one. Thank you guys for the work on it, and thank not just you, but also Tim.
You're welcome. And also, Ron Burnett was, I utilized him as our technical editor for it and had him review the book, despite Tim's already hard working. Ron picked up on some problems in the book that Tim said, boy, we've been here for years and nobody's ever noticed them before. So that was helpful. Okay. And hopefully we'll have a pretty package for it as well once Frankie has done her work.
Good deal. All righty. On the events report, the just a couple of questions, Boyd, from your report. So we ended up coming out okay on the U.S. Open, even with the housing problems we had?
Yes.
Okay.
The housing problem was not that we didn't meet our attrition, which is
no. We just, the housing problem was people were accustomed to being able to come at the last minute and get rooms that are reasonably priced because there was another event going on. We sold out our room block and people couldn't find other houses.
Yes, but that wouldn't have really affected much of our bottom line.
Right.
The U.S. Open wasn't budgeted to draw 500 players, so in that sense, conservative estimates on attendance served us well.
I'm interested on this event stream because I think we've done this a couple. Have we done this a couple of times now?
It's been done once as a full-fledged feature at the K-12 grades.
And we're going to continue to try to do that?
Yes.
Good deal. I think that is as much as anything a way for us to get some attention to the event. Now, it's not like going to get picked up nationally and all that jazz, but, you know, there were a whole lot of people who were following the World Championship in the various ways in which it was being presented out online.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we have, you know, within our community, this is certainly a way to reach out to them. That is not, I don't think that part's real all that terribly expensive, is it, boy? It's time and it's people. And I'm sorry?
Yeah, cost of getting people there.
Yeah.
There is some expense. There's probably some form of law of diminishing returns for our purposes. It's always possible to improve the quality of the product, but given that we're dealing with games that are not of world-class standards, we're talking about showing games with players rated roughly between 2,000 and 2,500 U.S. chess. I think that what we have now, there are a few other improvements we need to make, such as buying microphones for the analysts so that they can be better picked up by stream audio. And there are some expenses in there that, you know, I sort of vaguely thought might come around. A backdrop for the stream, for example, so that there's sort of a consistent looking feel. But that also then presents a sponsorship opportunity. The backdrop cost $100.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if we get sponsors, they can more than cover the cost of creating the backdrop with their logo on.
Cool.
Overall, I'd say probably a couple grand in, and those are sunk costs. I don't expect those to go up in terms of material. Probably the most expensive thing was the laptop that we got to handle the streaming capacity. After that, analysts. Probably about $2,500 an event between travel, fee, per diem, hotel. But we're only showing the last three rounds of the major national scholastic events because the first four rounds aren't terribly competitive for the most part.
Right.
With regard to the U.S. Open, my instinct is to go with the last three rounds of the traditional schedule there as well. Mainly due to cost. If somebody's interested in sponsoring folks to come in and do the invitational events, great. But it's really hard to imagine that 7 days of analyst work at the U.S. Open is worth what we would have to invest in the process. I think the last three rounds of the classical schedule would probably
with the different schedules and everything, and a lot of games, you know, there aren't that many interesting games anyway in the first few.
There might be some interesting games in the like say maybe on a shorter schedule, depending. But those are year to year. You never know
right.
what strength the faster schedules or the compressed schedules will draw in terms of players. So it's sort of a crapshoot. Whereas the last three rounds of the U.S. Open, one round a day, a full 6 hour game or so, possibly slightly longer this year since we'll be going back to an increment time control. That's a full show each night. Right.
Even the last two rounds, if you're, you know, if it was a cost issue, I know.
And three is appropriate because that's where round seven is where things start to set up for the top boards at the end. At that point, you have perfect scores from the three different schedules all getting together at the end, so the top boards are worth looking at starting around round seven. I would say.
I like what we're doing here. You know, I think that's a sort of innovative thing and. We can do it reasonably, cost effectively. It does need to be part of our communications plan, Dan, about that, you know, and I think emphasizing what we're doing with that and some of the stuff on podcasting and things, as we move that direction, becomes more important. We did get some feedback from an experienced member about promotion of the World Championship event, and we've pointed out to him that much of this has moved to an electronic format. You know, the idea of looking at this stuff in print is just sort of going away, in part because of the latency of the print product. You know, when I get my local newspaper, I'm seeing stories that come up online. All of the Sunday feature stories were put online on Tuesday and Wednesday. So I was looking at them before they showed up in the e-version of the paper this morning from back in Louisville. And that's sort of a common practice today.
But a version of the e-version.
I also pointed out to that member that there were abundant print versions as well. So
there absolutely were.
Right. This is all part of the whole comprehensive plan for the Southern
Academy. And as we get that webcast going, it may be something we want to publicize more at the event. Even that we're rolling into it, and I'm just thinking out loud. I think we're doing a good job there. It's just a matter of how, as it develops and grows, we'll figure out how we can use that.
Well, right, and things like this we mentioned the training program as well.
Boy, turning to the Illinois event, the National High School event being held in Schaumburg. I read with interest the issue with Illinois Scholastic players. And because this particular item sometimes elicits some interest in forums from certain people, just so everyone understands what happens there, both Boyd and I have our roots in Illinois. And so we grasp how that works. Better than some people who aren't very familiar with Illinois high school activities. The Illinois High School Association takes a much broader view of scholastic competitions than many other states do. The IHSA's roots are back to the turn of the 1900s. I think it was founded in like 1903. And under the IHSA competition umbrella, they not only have what many states have under their high school association, like football, basketball, swimming. They also have drama and speech and creative writing and dance and chess. And the IHSA sponsors a number of, quote, I'll get in trouble for doing this, I don't know a good way to do it, non-sport. They call them activities. So they have a number of activities that they sponsor state-level competition in, one of which is chess. And they have a fantastic eight-board team competition. The boards are weighted, so if you only show up with five, you can still play and be competitive. And they've just done, and it goes through the schools. The problem from our perspective is because of IHSA rules that is not, they require the schools not to have any requirement of belonging to any other organization. So rating the event is a problem for us because there's a lot of non-members in it. And it's been a concern as to, we have this great big pool of kids, how do we reach out to them in a way? So I read with interest in your report, Boyd, of looking for a way to do something with that. And I just want to say, go for it, man. I mean, really, I think anything we can do to, because it's going to serve our purposes for the event, just like you've outlined, it would give us the ability to have maybe a better understanding of player strength for some of these kids, because we certainly want them to show up and play at the National High School in Schaumburg. But the more we can get them introduced to U.S. Chesta, a bunch of these kids are playing U.S. Chess events. We've got many of these Illinois schools are showing up at our events outside of it. And the IHSA has taken sort of a hands-off approach and said, it's fine for you to go do that. If you are on a basketball team in Illinois and you're playing on any sort of team outside of the school team, they will rule you ineligible, not just for the basketball team, but for everything. So the IHSA has been very cooperative in allowing these kids to participate both within and without of the school structure. But I that was very interesting to me in your report, Boyd. And I just want to go on the record of saying that's in it, go for it. And I think it's an innovative deal. And I recognize there's some issues that we're going to deal with there. But
I have two questions.
Yeah.
Because there's two dimensions to this issue. One is the dimension of you have players who clearly have got competitive game experience, but yet they're, quote, unrated. Second one is you have potential for players who could otherwise be eligible to play in some undersection as part of a school team that already has kids qualified to play in an undersection. Those kids would therefore be ineligible to play in those undersections because they have no rating. So is that both? Does your note cover both of those dimensions, or more one than the other, or
a full treatment of this probably is best done off the record.
Well, we can add that into the closed session portion.
Okay. But there are answers to Mike's questions, and there are also comments amplifying some of the things you've mentioned that you probably would want.
Because my concern is that same dimension applies no matter where we have our tournaments.
The particular issue in Illinois is because the high school tournament is so large,
right,
and so many of those players are in and around the greater Chicago area. There is a greater risk in Illinois than most in other places of having issues in the under or unrated sections with players who do have demonstrable tournament experience. I do have ideas in mind for dealing with that for this particular event. And again, those should probably be taken up in close. Yeah,
because we have a similar, it's similar in Arizona and Washington.
And then we have other states where it's just simply not an issue. You know, I mean, Kentucky, for example, we're not associated with high school association in any form. And everything we do is rated, pretty much. So, you know, not that we kind of a big breadth of players. We don't have a lot of depth and strength.
Illinois is a one-off.
Yeah, Illinois's got kind of a weird situation, and you and I are pretty sensitive to it because we grew up there. My father was an Illinois high school principal, so for years, 20-something years, so I'm really read into the way IHSA does stuff. I still follow IHSA sports. Even though I've lived in Kentucky for 37 years.
So, I mean, there are answers related to this year's tournament that I think will satisfy a lot of concerns, which I will go into further in closed session.
By the way, if you haven't followed it, Eastside is probably not going to be allowed to play up in the football championships, and Illinois is changing their whole structure to district. I hate to see what's going to happen when your alma mater is playing 5A football, which is what they are by attendance instead of 7A. They're winning state titles two categories ahead of them. It's a fantastic football high school.
So, let them play up. So
they're
in
East St. Louis. They play up. Yeah, that's exactly what they do, like by choice. So,
my daughter's high school, Dowling Catholic, does the same thing, and they've won 5 straight.
Yeah.
Iowa, the largest class. They could play down 2 classes also. But then they recruit.
The other issue that I don't think we need to discuss at any length here is we are aware that we have an issue with the scheduled 2020 high school championships that was scheduled for Memphis. And we know that event's going to have to move because of some problems with the convention center. They're not having completed stuff. We don't know where it's going yet. And as we get that, we'll get that out to our chess community. And I don't think we need to discuss it. It just is what it is.
Yeah. Except to say that there isn't going to be some people will express concern about financial impact to the Federation. We're not paying any related cancellation fees for that event. And if we're moving to, the Memphis Convention Center is going to offset our costs for any damages we may suffer from having to move so quickly and not getting the same sort of rate we would get elsewhere. They're going to take care of us.
I wish to say we didn't have experience with this, but we actually do. When we had a U.S. Open scheduled for St. Louis and the hotel closed on us about 10 months ahead of the event, we ended up having it here in Orlando, actually. Actually, we had it here at this facility in Orlando. And I think our attendance took a hit because of the late change and some things, but we that hotel also helped compensate for some of the costs that were involved with it.
I have the motion from Chuck, if you want to go back to that.
Let's do that while we're here.
All right, this is from Chuck. Chuck Onron moves that the executive board approve the recommendation of the Reserve Fund Committee to increase the cash deposit allocation with the FDICI banks from 25% to 35% of the entire fund. The new allocation is accompanied by laddering cash deposits over the period of 1 to 3 years.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. The next thing on our agenda, we've actually already accomplished. We talked about, I wanted to review the facilities for the U.S. Open and the Super Nationals, which are here around us. And so, just for the record, yesterday afternoon, we took a walk over to the convention center. We got a sense of where the hotels for the Super Nationals in 2025 are located, the accessibility of those. I'm a bit sensitive to this because we're moving fundamentally into a different sort of facility, you know, where we're moved. And yes, we've had facilities, we've used convention center facilities before. It's been a long time. It's just somewhat different than when you've got everything under one roof. It is interesting that probably for most of our participants, the walk from their rooms to where they're going to be playing is going to be no greater, and in many cases less than, what they would find when they move from the far reaches of the Gaylord in Nashville down into the playing areas in Delta or Presidential particularly. And the lower levels in the Delta, they're a long way away from everything. And so, so it looks like we have, it'll be different, but it looks like it is not really further. The other thing of a concern for any of these events, obviously, is food service. And they've got all kinds of food service at the convention center. One thing that we will have to do, and I'm stating this so that it's on the record of our board meeting as much as anything else, is emphasize to people that they're not going to be able to bring in food and drinks to this event. That is not allowed under the contract there. We have a long history of people doing that, and so it's going to be behoove us to communicate they can't do that, as well as facilitate ways for them to get what they need in ways that are simple to do it. It is interesting that the Rosen Center here does have kosher food options, and so if we have folks who have those needs. Those may be better accommodated here than we have in some other locations. So I'm that looks to be. I've had a few concerns about this. Not that I'm worried about how it'll work particularly. It's just anytime you do something that's different, it's different. I know that
there's always questions.
There's always questions, and some people do jump and backflips because they don't have to try to find flights into Nashville. And then there'll be some of the people who won't come because it's in Florida. And they were driving to Nashville because it's way easier to drive to Nashville for a big bunch of our membership than it is to drive to Orlando. I don't know what it'll do to attendance. Attendance for events in Florida on the adult level generally have not been real good. So we're just going to have to see how this sorts out.
Adult attendance has not been good, especially at the U.S. Open.
Yes.
But attendance at the Scholastic
has generally been okay. Yeah.
Actually, yeah. Very good.
So what, I mean, from the perspective of having heard a lot of people saying we're just tired of going to Nashville for all these events. I mean, this isn't in Nashville, and Orlando certainly has a lot of attractions that are attractive for kids.
Yeah.
So I think there are some positive aspects too. Just, and I agree with you, having walked the Gaylord and having walked here, I really don't think that issue of logistics is going to be all that valid.
This setup here is actually more compact in terms of
exactly
where things are than Gaylord.
The labyrinth of the Gaylord.
You know, one thing that's interesting is, too, for those of us who've been doing this a while, we lose a little bit of some of this parent perspective to some degree. And we're talking about an event that's 6 years from now. And while for a planning purpose, 6 years is not very long, and from a coaches or adult sponsors, they're aware of the history, we're going to have a whole bunch of the parents that aren't going to know any different.
True.
It's going to be their first event like this, you know, because for many of our parents, they've got one shot at this thing or maybe two. I know it's possible they could have three, but most of them experienced this one time or perhaps twice, and that's all. So we will have a big chunk of folks who don't have anything to compare it to. And I don't think that's a bad thing, or a good thing, just a thing. So we'll see. Okay. I think we have, are there any other points you want to make about events in open session, sir? I don't know that you do. I'm not asking you to, I'm just asking you if you do.
No.
Okay, I'm good with that. It is 10:15. Let's take a break for a few minutes, if we could, and then we'll come back and continue with our agenda.
I know we're taking a break, but rather than not 5 minutes before the time of the session, it might be...
Wait, wait, wait.